Welcome to Making Life Easy, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Gwen Gustar.
Yeah, Gwen.
Welcome to Making Life Easy, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Gwen Gustar.
Well, good evening again. This is Making Life Easy with Gwen Gustar. Well, on the Tough Talk Radio Network, I am your host, and I invite you to listen in every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. We've been doing shows every Wednesday. I'm always on the air here. So if you missed the show today, of course, you can go to my archive by clicking on the same link. You can also call in during the show to speak live with, of course, me, the host, and my guest by calling 347-989-1363. And then press the number 1, or you can just call in to listen. So, but by all means, I invite you to call in and ask your questions, make comments. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on my show, please go to my website at www.makinglifeeasywithgwengastar.com and complete the registration form, and my producer will contact you and make you aware of all of the, you know, pertinent information that you will need, you know, prior to being on the show. Also, I want to talk a little bit about what these past few months have entailed. I've been working on a girls' summit. Of course, I think everyone is aware that I am a high school teacher, but several years ago, I had this really soft heart and watching the girls and, you know, their behavior and their no manners that they have, and I decided to do something for the girls, and I started this girls' summit, and of course, you know, yesterday was the big day for this year, and it was really, really a challenging project because, you know, you got to make sure you got everybody in place and, you know, all everybody have their duties and all this kind of, you know, crazy stuff. But on the end of the whole thing, I'm very proud. It turned out really, really great. The girls are talking about it, telling their other teachers, and the teachers will email me and, you know, commend me on obviously a job well done, but it was all about the children. It wasn't about me, but I tried to put my best foot forward for the girls. So, you know, we had a general session where we all got together and became comfortable with, you know, defining what a girls' summit is, and had a little entertainment and, of course, a keynote speaker, and she was excellent. She was very, very good. And then, of course, they went into the breakout sessions, and I think they were really excited about the fact that this was done during school, and it was planned, you know, off from the bell so that the girls in their transition from one place to the next would not interact with the other children that were passing from one class to the next. Absolute success. It was wonderful. I think the young ladies, you know, got a lot out of it, and they're asking me today, you know, when are we going to do it again, and that's the beautiful thing about it. Is when they come to you and they like something so well and they wanted to learn from what these presenters had to offer them, it's nice for them to come back and ask, when are we going to do it again? So I just wanted to kind of share with you, you know, what had been done, and I've been, you know, with tireless hours of trying to teach school and do this on the side of that, you know, but it was a major ordeal, major thing, and it was just wonderful. And I just kind of wanted to share with the audience about it's still all about the children and how and what we do for them. We just never know what place our children are in. And, of course, like I said, I teach high school, so these were, you know, sophomores, juniors, and senior girls, and it was just beautiful for them to come. And our color for the summit was pink, and it was just wonderful that the girls at some point had on something pink, and it just made them all look special. And, you know, they were all pretty and that kind of thing. So they were really, really supportive of it, and their friends that were, you know, on the program, they were supportive of that, and it was just great. It was just great. I wish the whole world could have seen it, how these girls transitioned from being these girls that we see every day and we think they don't have these manners and they just don't know how to act, but they just came right on through and were just nice young ladies on yesterday. So if we can just instill in them on a daily basis of acting the way that they did on yesterday, it would be a wonderful thing. So much for me and what took place at the school. I have this great guest. I have an author on my show today, and we're going to talk a lot about her book, and her name is Marilee McLean. McLean, I'm sorry, I think I mispronounced it again, although I asked her to help me there. So basically, she is a child advocate. She's written a book, Prosecuted But Not Silenced. I am so interested in wanting to share and let her share with you, you know, what's in this book and what she's, you know, what's her job here. What does she do out there in the public's eye to make everyone aware of these issues that we have with child abuse? So, Mary Lee, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here and get this information out.
Yes, I'm happy to have you. So tell us a little bit about you, and you have kids, you're married, and all that great stuff.
Well, I am a protective parent. I'm a mother that fought in our court system for many, many years trying to protect my daughter from being abused. This is a huge situation that's going on nationally, but at the beginning when this happened to me, it was back in the 80s, and my daughter was being sexually abused, and she was very young at the time, and the information that came out, there was actually, by the time she was four, there was physical evidence, and in the years, 2.5 years, I had to continue to give her back to her father, even though there were abuse allegations, and the more I fought the system, the more time she got with her dad. Now, if I was the only case out there isolated like this, I could maybe think, oh, there was a huge mistake made, but I've spent over 24 years working on this issue, and there's thousands and thousands of cases today. We have 58,000 children a year that are having to go live with their abusers. We have a huge problem in our court system. What happens, they take these cases into civil court, which really belong in criminal court, and judges aren't prepared to handle these kind of cases and are not necessarily trained. They really need to be trained by usually there's domestic violence in these cases, so they need to be trained by a domestic violence person or another advocate that knows what happens in these cases so they can understand the physical evidence and understand it better. And then along with social services, where we have had lots of problems in my state in Colorado, where they have a whole program they did on 9 News and in the newspaper, and they called it Failed to Death, where the system is failing our kids to death as of social services. My case and these other mothers' cases, I speak with a mother on the average every day, a couple of a day that are going through this. And it just would make the public sick because the taxpayer dollars that the public is paying out there are really not going where they need to be going to protect our kids.
Okay. Now, I kind of want to go back just a little bit to get a better understanding. Now, you said you fought the court system for a couple of years, you said, because your daughter was being abused, and it was back and forth with her dad, where obviously the question was here. Am I correct?
No, really, I was in the court system for many years. I wasn't in for just 2 years. That was just during the period where I was trying to protect her. But I went to court for probably 10 years, on and off.
So now,
the first maybe 4 years I was in there, steadily.
Okay.
And it's
so
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow. So, of course, here is the concern here is that you had concern about her being with her dad was the problem. But, of course, she still gets visiting rights with her father.
Right, because the court's issue is in the best interest of the child. They have a quote-unquote in the best interest of the child that is the parent that's more able to nurture the relationship with the other parent is the parent that gets custody. Well, obviously, the parent that believes and has medical reports and doctor's reports and police reports to state there's abuse going on is not going to be looking out for letting that other parent be with that child because obviously that's not in the best interest of the child for the child to be with a perpetrator.
So you were back and forth trying to prove this point that she was not in the best hands.
Yes, I was trying. I was just trying to save and protect her from any further abuse.
Okay.
And so there were lots of people involved in my case and lots of professionals. And there's a theory that started in the 80s. It's called parental alienation syndrome. And this theory is still used today. And there's a doctor by the name of Dr. Richard Gardner that started this theory. And he had his own self-publishing company. And so he self-published his book, and he sent it to every court in the nation. And this, what it is, and I mean, I have the terms. I went on CNN International News, and they actually brought him on the show and proved and stated the stuff that he believes in and that he wrote in his books. And some of the things he wrote, that we need to have more pity for the pedophile than scorn, that the Eastern culture has accepted this for century, and you know, we're here, we're kind of behind times, it needs to be accepted behavior, and that, that it's good for little boys and little girls to be abused because it makes them better sexual partners. This is all in his book.
Excuse me?
Now,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my
God. So it makes them better sexual partners, and nothing about what it does to the child, but what it is for, that we need to let them choose whom they want to love. And hold, and there were all these courts. So in the 80s, all these women started losing custody if there were sexual abuse allegations. And the bottom line is he's not approved by the American Board, of Psychological Board, nor the Medical Board. So neither one is he approved by, and it's not allowed to come into court. And today they're still using that theory. And so they just make it into a parental alienation that the woman is vindictive, a vindictive ex-wife, and the fact is the abuse is not happening. And no matter how much evidence comes out, they throw it out of court. And this all seems unbelievable. And for the listeners out there, this would seem unbelievable. But if you read my book and you knew, you know, you saw all these cases that are coming forward every single day, this isn't about a mom. They have studies that prove that if the father wants custody, 70% of the time he will win. Now, if you've got abuse allegations, especially sexual abuse allegations, I would advise women out there, you more than likely will lose custody because they won't listen to the issue. You're not the parent that's going to nurture that relationship with that other parent like I discussed earlier. Now, this Dr. Richard Gardner that there years ago, and they're still using the theory, which is a totally junk science, and it's been proven to be that, he committed suicide, I think, about 4 years ago, and he stabbed himself 8 times in his chest and his neck and all over, supposedly, and you know, that's somebody that's very credible or that's together, and, you know, what he's caused is unbelievable. But it's not just him. It's a society that doesn't want to look at this issue. And that's why I'm speaking, because I'm speaking for all those survivors out there. I'm speaking for all those mothers that are dying. They're literally dying. I've watched them go in the underground. I've watched them go to jail. I spoke at a conference about 4 months ago, maybe it was a while ago, but it was at George Washington University, and it was a battered mothers conference, and they came in, mothers came in from all over the nation. There was about 200 of them, but these are women that are scraping and borrowing to get there. They're not the women that are on their couch or bedridden by this point or so financially depleted, there's no way they could get to Washington, D.C. Of those mothers, I made one comment that just I would stick with anybody is, you know, in my day, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have books like mine out there. My book educates. My book is an educational tool for judges, lawyers, social workers, teachers, preschool, everybody that deals with anything to do with the trauma and child abuse. This book will help educate them to what's happening, plus through the legal system. Because what I did in this book is I put the emotional story in the beginning, and then I went in and put the research in, which I had worked on for 20 years. And then behind that, I put the legal. Because me talking right now, you can't believe this could happen. And in my book, when you read a report or you hear me state certain things that happened and what they did, you would not believe it. So what I did is I put Addendum A, go to Addendum A, and you go to the back of the book, and Addendum A will be that a real educational tool. And this has just been going on. You know, I just want to make a difference. And so I have really given my life to this, to making a difference so this doesn't continue. And we can get the laws changed and get these kids protected. And it's going to take education, a lot of education.
A lot of education, yes. The whole thing is, I mean, when you had this conference and you had all these women coming in.
Oh, that's what I wanted to tell you, yeah. Well, when all these women came in, we're like, and I'm speaking, and I told them, I said, you know, you guys have the internet. You have books like mine, and you have books like Mohana's and Barry Goldstein and these people that really have the facts together to show what's happening in these cases and get them somewhat prepared for what's coming down. And then, you know, I said, take a look at the mother sitting next to you. I said, because there is no one but that mother that's going to know the pain, you know, this kind of pain. Right. There's no pain like this.
Mary,
it's like a death.
Merrily, what I want to do before we get really into that so that you won't have to get interrupted, why don't we go ahead, we're going to take a break, and when we come back,
okay,
we'll continue talking with Merrily McLean. So stay with us. Give us a call at 347-989-1363. Got a hot topic going right now, so give us a call and come back. We'll be right back.
Are you an entrepreneur? Are you where you want to be? Do you believe that if you build it, they will come? Unfortunately, entrepreneurship doesn't work that way, and that's why you need to read Famous Isn't Enough. In this book, you'll find real-life situations and lessons learned. When all is said and done, there's nothing better than being your own boss. Remember, nothing just happens. You have to put in the work. Famous Isn't Enough is your roadmap. Get your copy today at www.famousisn'tenough.com.
Would you like to be more up-to-date with the real estate market? Do you have some nagging questions you want answered by experts who don't have anything to gain or lose by telling you a straight answer? Tune in to Fast Talk with Vicki Wachtel and get the latest on this fast-paced market. Start your Mondays off well-informed by listening to Vicki's Tell It Like It Is brand of wisdom. Listen live Mondays, 8:30 a.m. on the Tough Talk Radio Network by going to fasttalkwithvickiwachtel.com. Miss the show but want to go back and listen? That's okay. Just visit fasttalkwithvickiwachtel.com to catch up on past episodes. Fast Talk Mondays, 8:30 a.m. Central.
The Lesson Plan, a guide for mothers and teenage daughters. Are you connected? Do you understand each other? As a mother, do you want to redefine your position as a parent? Reestablish lost relationships? Strengthen your existing relationships? Be the role model your daughter needs? If you want a better relationship with your daughter, read The Lesson Plan, written by Gwen Gassard, educator, author, and radio host of Making Life Easy. To order your copy today, go to GwenGassard.net.
Okay, we're back with Making Life Easy with Gwen Gassard on the Tough Talk Radio Network. My guest today is Merrily McLean. And we're talking about the judicial system and child abuse here. So, you know, rather hot topic here. But Merrily is an expert here at this point because she's written a book. The book, of course, is entitled, kind of lost my paper here, entitled Prosecuted but not Silenced. And we're going to get into talking about specifically the book in a little bit. So, Merrily, you were beginning to tell the stories here, a procedure here, how things went, so you can go ahead and continue now.
I don't remember where I left off, but
okay.
I left off with the conference.
So we can remember. Yeah.
Yeah, well, just with the conference in Washington, D.C., and how women are coming in from all across the country that have lost custody of their children when they've been abused, sexually abused by the courts, by the father, and the father's retained custody, and the mothers end up with supervised visits, where they may only get to see their child an hour a week. They're treated as criminals. They can't. A lot of them lose all their parental rights. And these are not drug addicts, alcoholics, prostitutes. These are very healthy, good women, educated. When I testified before Congress many years ago, there were 10 other mothers from across the nation. And that's when I realized I wasn't alone in all this, because when each mother got up to speak, it was as if they were telling my story. So,
okay.
So it's a very horrific situation, and it's just costing the taxpayers tons and tons of money. We're losing our children, and when you look at the fact that 90% of our criminals that are in prison today, most of them have been abused as children, and what we go into society paying in that, I'm not looking at the money side of this as much as, but it is a money issue, and that's kind of what runs it, but I'm looking at the fact that we have lack of education with custody evaluators, social workers, lawyers on how they represent these cases, and then you've got judges who rubber stamp anything that's coming through by the professionals that are bringing the information into the court. So you're just kind of lost in there, and the child is totally not protected.
Okay, but you were saying that we're not educated are there enough people out there trying to educate, you know, the public or, you know, people involved? Do we have enough on staff to do that through the system?
Well, you know, it's all taking, you know, like my book, the news coverage. You know, I went on CNN, hour-long program, testifying, lobbying, and there are people doing that. To get it to the news media, it needs to get out there more in that direction to get this out there because they don't know how much this is happening, and it's way more than anybody would want to believe. So it's, you know, I would say, you know, the police departments, the DAs, you know, as far as my book, I did have an article in the American Bar Association Law Journal. Did you get to see that by any chance, Gwen?
No, I did not.
Okay. What it is it states, well, it's really a great article. It went out to all judges and lawyers, and it's just a law journal article in the American Bar Association Child Law Practice Journal. And what she asks me is, why did you decide to write my book, or what challenges did you face when you were in the, you know, trying to protect your daughter, and what did you learn? And you know, one of the main things, you know, the policy and the legislative changes that are needed to better protect our children is to ensure their safety first and have multidisciplinary teams and a forensic interviewer to interview and videotape all children, and have a court make specific findings on domestic violence first, because most of the time these cases do, like I said earlier, have domestic violence in them. And if they would issue, you know, deal with domestic violence first, but then deal with this issue, they wouldn't have to say the best interest of the child, because obviously if there's domestic violence going on, that's not in the best interest of the child, or is it in the best interest of the parent that's being abused. And recognize parents who are acting in good faith to protect their children, and discontinue the use of the parental alienation syndrome because it's discredited by the scientific and legal communities, and require the courts to consider past or present domestic violence, build effective oversight, accountability, and transparency for all professionals in these cases, and require continuing education for court professionals and judicial officers. So, you know, really, it's everything I've been saying is really the only thing that's going to change this issue and people talking about it like we're doing today and getting it out there.
Do you speak to all different people?
Well, you
all
know,
I'm
planning on doing more of that, but I'm working with domestic violence shelter places right now. I'm just setting that up. I am getting ready to do more, like, you know, TV programs, that kind of thing, to get that out there nationally.
Do you do anything with the schools? It just sounds like
And you know, the schools would be a good place, and I have not done anything with the schools, but that would be another good place to go. Yes, that would,
no.
and the police department.
Right. I think that, you know, given that, you know, I've been to tons of workshops and seminars on various things, you know, being in education, but I don't know that I've ever gone to one where we're talking about these types of abuse and how maybe being the teacher, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, kids tend to tell you a lot of things. And maybe if at some point teachers knew what those, where the red flag goes up, you know, we know when we need to report it, you know, because we always tell the kids, be careful exactly, you know, what you tell us as teachers, because we are required by law that we will have to, you know, bring in CPS if we felt that what you're telling us, you know, there's, you know, danger for you, for the child. So, but I still think, too, we still need to know those warning signs, you know, when we have kids in class, because you never know what kids are going through, to be very honest. You just never know what they're dealing with. You know, you can sometimes look at kids and see that there's a problem, and if you ask them, they're not going to tell you. But maybe if there was some kind of signs that are things that the kid might say that will kind of give us an insight on, okay, well, maybe this needs to be, you know, looked at a little bit farther instead of being so busy teaching the class and not really seeing that this child sitting in the back that's quiet,
There's a reason that kids, like, you know, in this kind of cases where there's been court hearings and what's gone on and the child's been abuser, they're really shut down. They're not going to talk. I mean, they've already, like, in my case, my daughter told policemen, doctors, social workers, her preschool teacher, her babysitter, numerous people what was happening to her and was not protected. So there's a point where they're shut down and cannot tell anybody. I mean, at her school, she was not allowed to talk about anything because the father had complete control of the school.
Wow.
And that's what I guess I would say for the teachers is these men are true sociopaths. And, you know, they come across as very educated and they're well-dressed and they come into that school and the school thinks they're great and they're the people that are up in the front of the stage saying what a great school this is and what great teachers you have. But you need to take a look that if you think that this child has been taken from a mother and it's a custody issue, this is not a custody issue. And you know, the child has, I'm sure at some point, I mean, my daughter already told, you know, her teacher and her preschool teacher and everybody, but still wasn't protected. You know, I don't know that that necessarily is going to help, but I do know that if the teachers are more aware of people aren't the scary boogeyman around the corner, they are the ones that are standing in the front of your classes, the ones that are coming in every day and doting on that child. And, you know, be a little more skeptical to think, well, where is the mother in all this, you know? Not necessarily is that mother a drug addict or an alcoholic or a sick woman. That mother may be that very mother like I was that was trying to protect her child.
Right.
And that mother, and maybe domestic violence involved. And, you know, it's a lot bigger picture.
Okay. Wow, that is really, that's really something, you know, that they have so much power here.
Yeah, it's a lot of control and power. At first, I thought I was fighting. You know, at first, I thought I was nuts. I remember there was this woman. She's an attorney from New Jersey. She got a attorney of the year, and she was working in a domestic violence shelter type thing as an attorney. And she kept getting calls from women like myself all across the country, just calling her. And she thought, and then she starts studying it. And she's a lot in my book because she's done incredible, phenomenal work. She's no longer here. She's passed away. But she was also abused. And she had five kids. And she would go sit on the courtroom, I mean, not the courtroom, but the Capitol steps with her kids and was on welfare because her husband was beating her. And he beat her in one eye until she went blind in that eye. And then he started the other eye. And she ended up going to law school. And when she was getting these calls, you wouldn't believe the work she put together and really showed that it's a gender bias issue, but it's way more than that. It's just her work really helped this program from the beginning, but we're way behind times. You know how long, Gwen, it took the public to deal with domestic violence? It took them forever to even look at that, and they're still not, because that's what this is about.
Right.
And so that, you know, took them forever to get there. And I remember I had a rally at the Capitol, and I was on the steps, and I was so busy planning the rally, I hadn't even planned a speech. And she got up to speak, and it was incredible. She brought in senators, and we had musicians there, and it was very well planned, but she didn't live here. She lived in New Jersey, so I was pretty much doing all the work. And she was doing all the outside work and bringing all the incredible people in. But the first thing she said on those steps, which was amazing, she said, "This is like the Civil Rights Act of the 60s. This is the movement of the 90s. Now, where are we, Gwen? We're in 2014, 13, and nothing has changed. What does that tell you? I mean, and this is a huge, huge issue. It isn't, I'm not saying because I lived it. If you knew how many women are going through this and children, and what do you think that's doing to our society? What happens to those kids?
Well, Marilyn, we have a couple of, two callers. We have, Stacy and Melinda, and what we're going to do, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we will bring them on. So please stay with us. Give us a call at 347-989-1363 and speak with my guest today, Marilyn McClain. So we'll be right back.
Okay.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio media where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Dr. Higgy and Kat of Health Chat have combined their expertise to help you manage your overall health by offering functional medicine and weight loss remedies that address all of your health care concerns. They conduct health seminars and weight management classes that are open to the general public. Their informative classes bring support, awareness, and solutions to chronic health issues to help you truly achieve optimal health and wellness. To find out more, go to TotalHealthCareManagement.com. That's TotalHealthCareMGMT.com. Making Life Easy is an electrifying and positive talk show filled with conversation to embrace the path for parents raising teenagers. Based on teachings from The Lesson Plan, author, parent, and teacher Gwen Gustav welcomes professionals, parents, and teenagers to the show to guide listeners on an educational journey. No matter what the subject, communication is the answer. Join Gwen on Making Life Easy Wednesday evenings from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Tough Talk Radio Network. For more information, go to MakingLifeEasyWithGwenGustav.com.
Okay, we're back with Making Life Easy with Gwen Gustav on the Tough Talk Radio Network. My guest today is Marilee McClain, and we're talking about child abuse and her being a protective mother, and she's an author of the book Prosecuted But Not Silenced. Marilee, we have a couple of callers on the line, and I think the first caller is Stacy. Stacy, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Stacy. How you doing?
Hi, Stacy. What prompted me to call in and raise my hand was when we were addressing the fact of going to the schools, and I think Marilee covered it very well. I also have a Colorado case, and I know in my case there's 50 reports with Child Protective Services by the schools, by the mandated reporters, school principals. When you get into these types of situations, what social services almost flags your family now, and protects that person. And all the reports where they reflect the blood, that the kids are bruised, that the stories are matching, a child being drug out of a bed and thrown across the room, these sociopaths, you know, they blame it on the custody. And that's where CPS comes into this and where they're failing our kids to death is taking a child out of a bed and throwing them across the room or abusing them. Has nothing to do with custody. It is a physical act of abuse of somebody. In my case with my children in Colorado, the school board and its attorneys sat down and had a meeting and made it very clear that they knew exactly what was going on and there was not to be another report of that abuse reported to social services. I also spent a couple of years as a result of my case being put into a supervised situation where that agency was contacting social services and reporting abuse with the fathers as well. Never able to report to the court, but they were monitoring me and witnessing that I was definitely not the party that should have been being with my children. So that's just what I wanted to put in on that, and I think it is training these people and helping them understand how to fix this, and there's a lot of different entities that are extremely broken that need a lot of education. I'm here.
Yes, I'm here. Is this something that is familiar with you?
With me, yes. Yes, very, very much so, yes.
Okay. Stacy, thank you for your call. We'll continue talking with Marilee McClain. We have, I think, next on the call is Melinda. Melinda, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi,
Marilee. And thank you so much for your book and for this program. I would think that living in the United States, if a parent were to lose a child, that parent should lose a child because he or she has committed a crime against the child.
Exactly.
And there are so many safe parents who have no record of mental illness, no record of any crime being committed in their lives, and yet when they come to the court and report abuse and their grave concerns to judicial officers, they lose their children. And this is,
yeah.
They lose their children in a court of law, is unconstitutional, and they are not given due process.
No due process, no civil rights. Exactly.
Absolutely. And you would, what you would, what people, what taxpayers and, you know, the general population do not understand is that there are 3.8% of custody cases that go to trial and beyond, that 90% of those, which is about 3.42%, are all domestic violence cases in which a domestic violence perpetrator hangs up the fists and then uses the courts to continue abusing. And
to continue
the abuse, and children are handed over to the abuser. All they have to do is show up in court and say, "I want to spend time with my child," the safe parent is targeted and looked at with suspicion of ulterior motives and trying to gain an upper hand in the case, and they lose their kids with absolutely no basis in reality. There are no charges. There is no evidence that the safe parent has done any harm to the child other than believe their child.
Well,
and
this puts us in
the same place as the Catholic Church and Jerry Sandusky, where victims are blamed and children are victimized as a result.
Well, this just sounds a lot that it seems like the court needs to be educated.
The court
There's no accountability. No
yes.
accountability.
Right.
It's kind of like what Dakota said, that, you know, most sexually abused children are victimized in their homes. The family court
right.
is the gatekeeper of their safety. And may, you know, these painful stories energize, like my book, energize the readers and spark a tsunami of accountability and scrutiny of those judges, custody evaluators, guardian ad litem, lawyers, whose misguided and often misogynistic nonsense jeopardizes generations of children and compounds their misery. I mean, I think he says it in that. And excellent what you're saying, Marilyn, because that is what is going on. There's no constitutional rights. It's a catch-22 for the all she's trying to do is protect her child. And these women, like she said, are healthy, wonderful mothers. I know a lot of them. So it's not like I go to court watch now and I watch these cases come down and watch moms represent themselves. That one that was just on, Stacy, she represented herself and she did an excellent job. And then sometimes they do better than the attorneys because they've had to learn their
right.
case from being in the court.
Well,
system.
They know their cases.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, who are you? What's your name? Marilyn?
Melinda.
Melinda. Oh, hi, Melinda. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we are court watchers here in California, and we, you know, I've come to with a group of my court watcher colleagues. I've come
mm-hmm.
to the conclusion that the family law courts and the dependency courts should be disbanded, and that
oh yeah, they're failing miserably.
Yes.
They're failing miserably.
They aren't courts of law. They are courts. They are run. They're hiring agencies for third party hacks who do not protect children. And it represents one of the biggest shifts of American wealth from litigants into the hands, litigants and unknowing taxpayers into the hands of third-party hacks who destroy the lives of children as they build their own, you know, their own wealth.
Well, there's there's their own agenda there. There's another agenda there. There really is. And I know you know what that agenda is.
Okay. Melinda, thank you for calling. We have
thank you for your call.
Stand in line here. So, you know, connect with Marilee so that you all can, you know, continue and see what Juan's doing back and forth here. But I have another call on the line, Cindy. Cindy, are you here? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Cindy.
Hi, I'm good. Hi, I'm so glad that you're having Marilee on. She's such a great spokesperson for our cause. And, I actually started an organization called Safe Kids International, which deals only with this issue. I think it's the only organization that deals exclusively with what we call court-licensed abuse. And what court-licensed abuse is when judges deliberately disregard and conceal evidence of abuse, especially sexual abuse, and they silence the mothers who try to come forward and protect them by taking
like I had a gag order. Yes,
right.
You had a gag order.
Right, and so, but the biggest silencing actually comes from separating the child from the mother, because once they are separated, they can't speak. They traumatize the child by putting them in the full custody and control of the abuser, and then they threaten the mother that if she keeps trying to protect her child and she keeps speaking about the sexual abuse, that she's never going to see her child again. So
and they do that.
I agree with Marilee that the people involved aren't really educated on this issue, but also I don't think that it takes a rocket scientist to look at abundant evidence of abuse and a child saying they're being abused to decide that there's preponderance of evidence. I mean, most of these cases are a deliberate cover-up of sexual abuse.
Yeah, you know, like in my case, when they had all the evidence that they had three hospital reports, the three police reports, and top doctors in the state of Colorado from the Child Advocacy and Protection Team wrote a letter to the judge stating my daughter's physical evidence was very alarming. Please call, contact them concerning this the sexual abuse, and the judge refused to contact them. Now, that's amazing. And this went on from the time she was 2.5 till she was 5, and tons of evidence, and they ignored it all. And most people think they can't, most moms would think they can't ignore all that evidence. Well, they do. And because I didn't shut up, I got a gag order. And I went on international news with my case. There hasn't been any since, but like CNN did an incredible job on my case and showing what goes on in these cases. And that's years ago.
I'm sorry. Cindy, we have another caller waiting. And
thank you. That was very, very good. Very well done. Thank you so much.
Okay, can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
I don't think the solution is only to educate. We have Damon's Law in the pipeline, and what we're trying to do is get these cases out of family court, because no amount of training or education is really going to change anything. We're trying to make these sexual assaults be treated as crimes, not as custody.
Right.
They need to go in criminal court, and they are a crime. They don't belong in family court, and family court can't handle it. And it's a criminal charge. It's nothing to do with family court, and it's never anything to do with custody. And it's domestic violence and going into abuse, and it needs to get out of family court. And it needs to be handled. Okay. All right.
Okay,
thanks.
I'm sorry. We're going to have to take a break. Thank you, Cindy.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to have to go to break.
Thanks, Cindy.
Okay. Thank you. And when we come back, we have another call on the line, Debbie. So give us a call at 347-989-1363 and get on the call with my guest, Marilee McLean. We'll be right back.
Join Judy Hoberman on her radio show, Selling in a Skirt, Mondays at noon Central, for exciting discussions about challenges for women in today's society. The talk is about women in business, work and life balance, leadership, and current events related to gender communication. Be prepared to be inspired, motivated, and challenged.
Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on the Tough Talk Radio Network is your connection to women nationally, internationally, and globally. So get comfy and see what the buzz is all about. Listen live on Mondays at noon by going to sellinginaskirtwithjudyhoberman.com.
Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, a show that delves into the hot topics of life. Lloyd takes life's issues head-on with hard-hitting interviews with professionals such as doctors and teachers, as well as those that have experienced life's alerting issues, whether professional, emotional, or physical. Lloyd wants to help those that are searching for answers to living a successful life. Life's Issues airs every Friday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network. Find out more at lifesissueswithlloydrosen.com.
The Lesson Plan, a guide for mothers and teenage daughters. Are you connected? Do you understand each other? As a mother, do you want to redefine your position as a parent? Reestablish lost relationships? Strengthen your existing relationships? Be the role model your daughter needs? If you want a better relationship with your daughter, read The Lesson Plan, written by Gwen Gassard, educator, author, and radio host of Making Life Easy. To order your copy today, go to GwenGassard.net.
Okay, we're back with Making Life Easy with Gwen Gassard from the Tough Talk Radio. My guest today is an author, Marilee McLean. She's the author of the book, Prosecuted But Not Silenced. Marilee, we have another caller on the line. Her name is Debbie. Debbie, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am. Hi, Debbie.
How are you?
Good.
I'm good.
Marilee, this is Debbie from Jefferson County, Colorado.
Oh, I know Debbie. Hi, Debbie.
Okay, hi.
I want to just start off by saying that I was a school teacher in Jefferson County, Colorado for 33 years, and I don't have a case in family court and never have. But I became involved through a friend of mine, and once I started learning what was going on, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So I started going to court watches, and I have personally witnessed the court give children to sexual perpetrating fathers. This becomes a gender issue only in the fact that the ranks of the pedophiles who will perpetrate against their own children are mostly made up of males. That's a statement that has been very well researched, and there are plenty of statistics to support it. I myself am not gender specific in terms of, I know that there are cases that go both ways, but I do want to say that it made no sense until I finally found in the Department of Human Services Memorandum of Procedures that they have a policy of returning children to a parent with a history of sexual abuse as long as the parent is not in denial. So it's when the parent is convinced to talk about what has happened, that parent gets the child back after receiving federally funded therapy.
That may happen in some cases, but, you know, in a lot of the cases like mine, they didn't even have to say they needed help. They just went with the father. They just totally did not even look at anything when there's evidence there. So it didn't have anything to do with the father, because the father in the cases that I come across would never admit they've done this. They're the better parent.
Let me kind of break in here for a second. So let me understand that the court system is giving these kids back to these fathers, but now aren't there medical reports and aren't there evidence to show that this is going on?
Absolutely,
yes.
There is.
When I'm telling you, if you read my book, and I know Dev has read my book, if you see the medical reports that are in this book that back everything I said, it would make you blow your mind that our courts are doing what they're doing. And it kind of goes back to what Cindy said, the earlier caller. They need to be in criminal court. These people cannot handle. It needs to be a judge that's in criminal court that's trained on domestic violence and child abuse. And a pedophile, what lengths they'll go through to not be caught. And, I know that what Deb's bringing out, she's stating that the funding, the federal funding that goes to this is unbelievable. As I was saying earlier, the tax dollars, the money that they get spent into social services for keeping, you know, fathers with the children or for child support, they put billions into that, and there's millions into the child abuse side of it. So there's a big difference.
What I don't realize is how what the relationship is between the Department of Human Services and the family court. The family court is an administrative court, as is the Department of Human Services. It is an administrative entity, and that means that they collaborate for the goals that they want to see happen. Even the CASA volunteers are told what to look for. Everybody says, well, there are CASA volunteers. We know that they take the recommendation. They look for what they're told to look for. They're told to, you know, does the child cry when the child's reunited with the mother? Well, yeah. You know, I mean, that's what they're looking for. They're specifically trained, and they're also trained to understand that things maybe don't make a whole lot of sense, but that's the law.
Wow. Well, it just looks to me that what you guys are doing, pulling together and you know, forming this group to fight this, because someone has to speak for the children. I mean, you know, my biggest, you know, concern is always about the children, you know, and I talk about it all the time, but never knowing that, you know, listening to the statistics that you're talking about and what's going on in the court system with these dads, and you tell me there's medical evidence, and, I mean, I just don't understand. But I heard what you said about the dollars. You know, dollars always play a great part, you know, in this kind of stuff. But
this is a huge women's rights issue, too, because in many parts of the world, women and children are considered property. And in divorces in those countries, the children go to the fathers. That is.
And
that
you know, it's just like I said earlier, is there's stats that will prove that if a father wants custody, 70% of the time he'll get it. Now, you get sexual abuse in there, and you can count on it, you're going to lose custody. I mean, I just had a case recently of a mom that I court watched with, and I told her before her case, I read her file, and I said, I hate to tell you this, and it was the worst thing I've ever done for me to say this. I said, but you probably will lose custody and end up with supervised visits. And I thought, oh, that was hard for me to do and say. But I wanted to prepare her somewhat, because had somebody said that to me, I wouldn't have believed them anyway. But at least you're a little bit prepared for what's coming, because you would never believe that that could happen. Never. You're a good
mother.
And I see
it too.
And that father was abusive. He abused her. He beat her. And she's a beautiful woman and an educated woman. That doesn't mean that, you know, domestic violence isn't in every walk of life. It is, and we know that for a fact. But we also know for a fact if there's domestic violence, there's more than likely right behind it child abuse. And if people aren't going to listen to the children, believe the children. I remember that sticker, you know, it was on my car, and believe the children, believe the children. My daughter talked till she was going to. She told everybody in detail what was happening to her that most children could not even say, that I couldn't even believe what I was hearing. And this is before you ever heard this stuff. And you get upset about Sandusky and, you know, Pennsylvania State thing, and then the Catholic priest. And the biggest culprit of this whole thing is our court system. You know, Sandusky, it makes me sick what he did. But how is those kids, if they had to go back to a parent that continued to abuse them, the most trusted person in their life, the parent.
Matt Sandusky's mother she had her parental rights terminated, and she fought the placement of adoption of her child into Jerry Sandusky's home for years. So when you look through this, these cases have been happening for over 30 years.
Oh, yeah, probably longer than that. We just don't know. But it's, you know, just like what I said earlier, when we go back 25 years ago and we have somebody, a very influential woman attorney that's very involved in all this back then, and she's standing on the Capitol steps stating, this is like the Civil Rights Act of the 60s. This is a movement of the 90s. It is that. But it didn't even happen. We're 20 years later, and we can't get our kids protected. I have to listen to these letters every day. I go to Court Watch and my heart is aching. I'm sick to my stomach, but I'll go through it. And I wrote this book because of that. I wrote this book. I started writing this book when my daughter was 2.5 years old because I didn't believe what I was seeing happening. And I figured I wasn't going to make it through it. I wasn't going to survive it. I figured he would possibly kill me. I didn't know. And all I can tell you is, and I'm so glad I wrote this because this is a tool that will help other mothers out there, and hopefully we can educate the system. But like Cindy said earlier, it's not just education. There's way more to it, and it does belong in criminal court.
Right. Well, Debbie, it was wonderful that you called. I'm glad that you connected
Thank
here.
You.
Mary,
Thank you.
It's been a great show. What I'd like to do is have you tell us how we can connect with you, your website and your email, what you have coming up next.
Okay, well, my website is www.mmclean.tateauthor.com.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
My name is, my name, M.M. McLean, and then TateAuthor.com, and you can purchase the book there, then also you can go to Barnes & Noble, or there's lots of other places you can get the book through Tate Publishing or Amazon. And what did you just ask me? What else am I going to be doing next?
Why? What are you going to be doing next? I mean, some place
well,
that you
I,
can...
I work on this issue every day, to be honest with you. I'm trying to help other women out there. I also do conferences. I am marketing my book like crazy right now, which takes a lot of work. I'm trying to get it out there, like the American Bar Association Law Journal, getting it in there. And I'm doing a lot of the marketing on my own. So, and then book signings, and it just is really, really keeps you busy. But I'm giving my life to this for a very good reason. I have to make a difference. And any woman that's gone through this, I've had mothers that have just kind of gone to bed or said, Marilee, you keep going for me, and I'm in you because this makes me cry, but I'm in you because they can't go. I'm going for those mothers and those children. And I won't stop. I won't stop till I get something done here. We all do. And there's organizations. There's CPPA, California Protective Parents Association. They're really strong in this. And you've got lots of different organizations, Safe Children, and organizations that are working this, but we all need to come together. And Congress, I lobbied for years. I don't know about that. I don't know that that's really going to change anything because it just has taken too long already. But I would like to see congressional members get in there and the congressional women go, oh, this is not going to happen any longer. We're going to come down and make some changes.
Right.
That's
well,
my advice.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been so interesting, and the callers and just the conversation period has been really enlightening and educational, because, we look at the news and we hear about these kind of things, but when we're not directly involved or right there to hear, just as I'm hearing you today and, the callers that called in, I don't know, because it's not in the circle of where I am and what I'm doing, and I don't know anybody, close to me that
well,
this is
happening. Well, and it's like that teacher that just called in, Deb. She has nothing to do with this. She just got wind of it through another person, and she's a real activist in this now, and it's because she knows what's going on. She sees it. You don't have to witness it. You can read my book, or you'll start looking at this issue, and you'll know it's happening a lot more than what you ever dreamed.
Marilee, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having
thank
me
you.
On, and nice talking thanks. To you, and keep doing the good work.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to Making Life Easy with Gwen Gastarb.
Okay.
Please visit my website at www.makinglifeeasywithgwengastarb. Please go to my blog. Please be a guest to my blog. Visit me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You can order my book, The Lesson Plan for Mothers and Teenage Daughters, at www.gwengastarb.net. Stay tuned each day to listen in on a team of hosts on the Tough Talk Radio Network for more variety of shows. Remember, children are the most precious gifts that God will give to a parent in a lifetime. Thank you for listening. Have a great night, and I will talk to you next week. Good night.
This has been another edition of Making Life Easy with Gwen Gastarb, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, please go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.